Today's seems to go with, it's very timely with what's going on in America right now. But anyways, we'll try to keep it towards God's word and from there. So anyways, today's lesson is called Korah's Opposition. It might be Korah, it may be Korah. I don't know how, I don't speak Hebrew. So I'll probably say Korah just because. If it's the other way, I'm wrong. So anyways, we're going to look at Numbers. We're going to look at the first half of it, verse 2/3. Numbers 16, 1 through 22. So anyways, I got this picture Tuesday night down at Bayside High School. If you've never been to Bayside High School, it's Palm Bay. Go clear to Malabar Road and keep going through the woods until you get there. It's even with Valkyria Road, so that's how far south it is. It was Grant's first JV soccer game. He's number 13, shortest kid on the team. So anyways, there he is. So we had to go see his first soccer game because we're parents and that's how we roll. So anyways, it's just how it rolls. We were there. And I was glad I did. It was a good game. They lost 2-1. Grant scored a goal as a defender. If you know much about soccer, defenders don't score. They're not in a position to score. They're on the wrong end of the field. They cleared a corner kick. He kicked it back, went over everybody's head, hit what I call upper 90, which had been the upper left end of the goal. And anyways, he scored the only goal. So the team's leading scorer is not a scorer. So anyways, it was great to be there. So that's kind of how the opposition lines up in a soccer game. They introduce players, they put their backs to all the parents, and that's how they roll. So that's Titusville and Bayside. If you ever seen soccer, it's a ball. People go after the ball. First of the ball gets the ball. Last of the ball doesn't get it. That's how the opposition goes. It isn't turn-based like football or baseball. It's more like basketball or hockey. The ball continually moves. They don't even stop the clock in soccer. The clock keeps going. So anyways, that's the opposition we saw Tuesday night. And we can see it two more times this week. Opposition on Tuesday also happened. What was that? Something happened in America, right? There was allegedly only two decisions that people could make, one side or the other. Whichever side you're on, you probably didn't care for the other. Those two sides are bundled about like cable TV. You get what you get. It's not necessarily that you want to watch all the channels. It's a whole package of stuff. So that's kind of how decisions were made. I voted. I was the first ballot cast in my precinct. And yes, the thing didn't like my ballot and spit it back out, so I had to do it again. But I got the first ballot, so Grant said I knew who was ahead at that point, and I did. So, anyways, my I voted sticker. And those were nice I voted stickers. Anybody else get stickers like that this year? You guys got them like that? Usually they're those little white ones that just say I voted, but I liked this year's stickers for just whatever it was worth. Another opposition, we had Veterans Day on Friday. I know it was Marine Corps Day on Thursday for the Marines amongst us, who he gives credit for his daily survival. So anyways, but they've seen many an opposition over the years. I posted this picture on Friday on Facebook. These are my grandparents. It says February 1943, Memphis, Tennessee, near Hoosiers. They're from Indiana. Story of my grandpa, the best I know it. He had a family with kids. He claimed the last one was not his. He walked away from that family, started a new family. He married my grandmother. Something caught up with him. I don't know if it was child support, alimony, or whatever. And the sheriff or whatever said, you have two choices, to go to jail or the Army. He chose the Army. Good choice. This is after basic training. He went on to the Tennessee Maneuvering Grounds, which is like Lebanon, Tennessee. From there, he went to England for staging. Went into France, August of 1944. Went across France, went across Germany. Was in a few death camps, concentration camps, helped liberate some of that, and ended up in Austria before coming home. Sometime in that period, my mom was born 6 months after this picture, so I guess really she's in this picture, as Grandpa went away to war, because Grandma was pregnant. They had four kids. Grandpa had a time with alcoholism. Something changed one day, and the family picked up, moved, and life changed. My grandfather went on to be a Bible teacher and a deacon in a Baptist church. The guy I knew is not the guy that ended up in that uniform. So, anyways, life changed. It's amazing. And we'll leave it at that. The opposition to this world, opposition to war, opposition to politics, opposition to sports. We all understand opposition. It's in front of us every day. So anyways, those are just some things this week that I saw such. It's important to note that this is usually at the end, but I put it at the beginning. It kind of sets the stage. It's important to note that a measure of truth accompanied the initial complaints against Moses and Aaron. This is typical when charges are made against others. Even so, the interest of the rebels in this account was not that truth be served. We can see this on the news today. We saw this on the news leading up to the election. Truths, exaggerated, they start out with a little truth. And you'll see that in today's lesson. These leaders of Israel use language and arguments that are partially true. People are holy, and the leaders should lead the people in the ways of life. Likewise, they take up a key symbol, the priest's role, the censer. They use these truths and the symbol to disguise what they really have rejected, the ways of God, and instead subscribe to a style and understanding of leadership that is ultimately about power, position, and envious desire for them. So that's where we'll get with this. Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, if I say those names wrong, maybe they can complain, not only challenged the leadership of Moses and Aaron, but also essentially challenged the authority of God. We should think very carefully before speaking against individuals who are seeking to do God's will. Accusations should not be made without considering the consequences. Remember, Paul instructed Timothy, do not receive an accusation against an elder except from two or three witnesses. 1 Timothy 5:19. All right, so that leads us up to today's lesson. The lesson, we'll start with it. I'd like to go ahead and read the whole lesson, and then we'll go back and discuss it. That way you get the whole picture. Sometimes we get too small a picture, and we don't get the big picture. So anybody up for reading? I don't have chocolate to throw today, but if you want to read chocolate-free, we got, 10 slides worth. So anyone want to start? In Numbers 16, verse 1. What's that? Not those words? Nobody wants to pick up the Hebrew words? All right, I'll do this one then. Wow. Well, when we found out we were teaching Numbers this quarter, Weldon immediately went to Chuck and said, you can be the Hebrew expert. I will not pronounce a single Hebrew word. But that brings me back to the world's greatest lads leaders game. Say it or spray it. Joshua is filled with Hebrew names and places. There's no way to say them correctly. I found a thing on the internet that supposedly pronounces the names correctly. So we had the kids take turns guessing how to say a word, and then we would play the internet site, the website, to see how they claimed it was pronounced. Of course, most of those names, nobody's even close. So now Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. They rose up before Moses with a number of people of Israel, chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, you've gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? When Moses heard it, he fell on his face. He said to Korah and his company, in the morning, the Lord will show us who is his and who is holy. He will bring him near to him. And the one whom he chooses, he will bring near to him. Do this, take censers, Korah and all his company, put fire in them and put incense on them before the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the holy one. You've gone too far, sons of Levi. And Moses said to Korah, hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them, that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also? Therefore, it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him? And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and said, they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them. I have not harmed one of them." And Moses said to Korah, "Be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, you and they, and Aaron tomorrow. Let every one of you take his censer and put incense in it. Every one of you bring before the Lord his censer, 250 censers, you also, and Aaron, each his censer." So every man took his censer and put fire in it, in them, and laid incense on them, and stood out at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Then Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. And the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And they fell on their faces and said, "O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation?" And we end it right there. So, anyone want to summarize what happened? We'll break it down. Anyone want to just give me a quick summary on that? Moses and Aaron are God's chosen leaders. We've looked at that for the last few weeks. They continue to grumble against them. Guys, Korah and Abiram and Dathan grab 250 other leaders of Israelites, and they basically say, "We're tired of your leadership. We want what makes you think you're the chosen one. You haven't given us what God promised, and now you act like you're the leaders." So anyways, they said, God says, "Why don't you guys come together and I'll choose," and that's where we get to. So, anywho, we'll pick it up from there. Actually, we'll pick it up a little bit earlier. So when Moses, Numbers 14, 39 and 40, when Moses told these great words to all the people of Israel, the people mourned greatly, and they rose early in the morning and went up from the heights of the hill country, saying, "Here we are. We will go up to the place that the Lord has promised, for we have all sinned. For we have sinned." Last week, two weeks ago, Chuck talked about the spies going into Canaan. You guys remember that? If you were here, Chuck talked about they sent 12 spies into Canaan. They come back with reports of giants and big grasshoppers and stuff like that. And what got missed in teaching, and I don't know, we don't really know why, but the notes kind of skipped over it, and we think it was because it was somewhere else. But the people decided to believe in the giants rather than that God was giving them the land. So they said, "There's no way we can go up against that." So God said, "Fine. None of you older than age of 20, except for Joshua and Caleb, the two spies that said, yeah, we can take this land, none of you will go into Canaan. Everybody else will perish before they ever go." And we know from history that for 40 years, they'll wander in the wilderness, basically as that count gets lower and lower and lower, till it's Joshua, Caleb, and everybody who was under 20 at that day. And that's who actually will go into Canaan. After this was pronounced, they decided, although Israel was prohibited from entering the promised land until the death of that generation, they decided to go in themselves. Although God said no, they said, "Yeah, we'll just go. You're not going to keep us out." And that's what happens here in Numbers 14. Well, Moses said, "Why now are you transgressing the command of the Lord when that will not succeed? Do not go up, for the Lord is not among you, lest you be struck down before your enemies. And here the Amalekites and the Canaanites were facing you and shall fall by the sword, because you have turned back from following the Lord, and the Lord will not be with you." So what's Moses' warning as they decide they'll take Canaan on their own? God's not going to lead you. He's not going to defend you. He's not going to give you the power that it takes to take that land. He already said no. And in verse 44 and 45, "But they presumed to go up to the heights of the hill country, although neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses departed out of the camp. And the Amalekites and the Canaanites lived in that hill country, came down and defeated them and pursued them even to Hormah." So what happens? exactly what you'd expect. Yeah, so some of them went to take Canaan. Moses, the leader, didn't go with them. The Ark of the Covenant didn't lead the way. God wasn't with them. They failed. With this, you get this ill-fated attempt to enter the Promised Land, and there's yet another challenge. We've looked at some of the challenges. We've looked at some of the grumblings over the last 5 weeks. This new challenge, we should go back to Numbers 16, 1 through 3, and we'll kind of look at it verse by verse. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. They rose up before Moses with the number of the people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, "You have gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So this group comes to challenge the leadership of Moses and Aaron. Who's in this group? Korah. Yeah, get rid of all. If you get rid of the sons of, you can see it a little bit clearer. But you got Korah, you got Dathan and Abiram. You got those three guys. Who did they bring with them? 250 chiefs. Are these just nobodies? People know them. They're leaders in some aspect, aren't they? These are well-known people. Everybody knows them. They're not outsiders. They're not nobodies. These are, they're leaders in some aspect. So this is who comes up against us. So the leaders are Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And we usually look at Korah as being the key guy. But the other two are part of that. What do they challenge? It's kind of more than just Moses and Aaron, I guess.
They're still roaming around the desert,
right? Yeah, and they're still roaming around the desert. Yep. No. That's really the key to it. Yeah, we didn't believe the spies, and God says we're not going to go in. They really don't want to accept that. That's really probably the key right there. You got it right there. If something happens, we don't need the rest to get the rest of the class. You got it right there. They had circumstances that God put on them for their unbelief, their lack of faith. They pin that back on Moses and ultimately on God. So yeah, that's the challenge. No, they haven't learned. It's all right. We're that way. And we shouldn't be, but we kind of that way. Yeah, that's a big question. Why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? Anybody here could lead this. Why do you put yourself in that position? Verse 3, they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, said to them, "You've gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them. The Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. It attacks God. God has shown them. And he separated Moses and Aaron for this job. So he separated them for his purpose. Yeah. And he has a different relationship with Moses than with anybody else through time. So as close to holy as you're going to get, it's Moses. But the claim, it seems to be, that Moses made himself that way, self-appointed himself in that. Because why do you, why you have gone too far, why do you exalt yourselves? So they're pointing at him putting himself in that position. No, he didn't want the job. Sure. No, he didn't want the job. God put him in that job. God gave him that authority, and he's over time, he's shown This is the guy I've chosen. This is the relationship I have with him. So what was an irrationality in this? What was an irrationality in saying that he was that way? What was an irrationality? Oh, who did they say ought to have that authority, and what was an irrationality in saying that person should have authority rather than Moses and Aaron? They said everybody should be the leader, right? Is that what it says? For all in the congregation are holy, every one of them. So you don't, it should be governed by the people, not by God's chosen leader. And they claim that everyone is holy, like you said, Nathan. Yes. Yeah, that's what they're saying. So we'll appoint ourselves to take that position. Sure. You think they really want that shared leadership? You got 250 guys, 250 chiefs, and you got Korah and the other two guys that are leaders. Do you think they really want to share that leadership with 1.6 million Israelites? Probably not, right? Want to see how easy it is? Let's all of us go to lunch together after church. Why don't we skip out early, okay? We'll skip out like right after the sermon. We'll skip out early. Where do you want to go? Come on, somebody pick something. Sunny seems like a popular spot amongst the Church of Christ, right? I've been there. I've seen tables for people at the Church of Christ. Sunny sound fair? Who don't want to go to Sunny's? Raise your hand. Who don't want to go to Sunny's today? Come on, Kevin, you don't want to go. Kevin doesn't want to go to Sunny. Thanks, Kevin. See? So we can't get everybody to go because he's got steaks. You know, steaks are better than Sunny's. Okay? Well, let's go to Kevin's. It's all changed now. Who wants to go to Kevin's house? But Kevin probably don't have enough for everybody, right? What's that? Bring your own steak. Catch your own. Kevin's still got to cook it, though. So, but you can see how hard it would be to get 1.6 million agreements. If you've ever gone with a big group to do anything, to get everybody in agreement of where to go and what to do, it ain't going to happen. The election we had on Tuesday, 60 million people picked one person, 60 million people picked another person. 240 million people didn't pick either one of those people. But there's still controversy. And that's how it'll be. So, and it's, God chose a leader, and he said, that's who it is. These people don't want that shared leadership. They're really, it looks like, they want to be the leaders. Why do you think the people were influenced by Korah, Dathan, and Abiram? Because they want to eat at Sonny's. They don't want the same old quail and manna. Yeah. Brent?
I think because Moses had been gone for 40 years, and he was like no one was really sure who he was.
But they didn't have any trouble lining up behind him going through the Red Sea. Yeah. Yeah, this guy didn't do what, make Israel great again, ain't happened yet. We don't even know who he is.
When people are acting like this, then it doesn't matter who God sends, they're going to challenge it.
Sure.
That's the point of the story.
That's the point of the story. Yeah, it really didn't matter who it was. They're still going to challenge it.
But
when it's been pinned on you that your own decision not to believe the spies, the two spies that said we could go into Canaan, when that decision is pinned on you of why you're not going into Canaan, it'd be nice to be able to push that off on somebody else. You see that in Acts 2. Peter's sermon basically is, we've been looking for the Messiah. We've been looking for the Son of God. He came, his name was Jesus, and you killed him. people in Acts 2 say, great, now that we've offended God, what do we have to do to get right with God? And the answer there is repent and be baptized. You'll see the same thing in Acts 6 when Stephen tells them the same story and they kill him. It's the heart of people. That's how they are. Sometimes they say, I need to get right with God. And sometimes it's, I'd like to push that off on somebody else.
What you see here is God at work, how he works in, how God works in the world, basically. How he's constantly testing people.
Tests are there, and we can always find God. He's not here, Alicia. Anyways. Do you really mean what it says? Especially when it takes work. It might take a sacrifice on your own behalf. It might take a change in your own who you are and how you do things. Yeah. The nation was under a sentence of God's judgment, and these men knew that they are part of the doomed community. Perhaps they thought that by a forced change of guard, they might even reverse the fortunes of the people. Theirs was an organized, well-thought-out conspiracy. It's not just a momentary, casual play of a motley crew. They had not come up to Moses and Aaron, but against them. It'd be tough being one of those people. I'm older than age 20. I'm not Joshua and Caleb. I'm going to wander around the wilderness until I die. It'd be tough being one of those people, knowing the promise of God was that promised land, and I'll never get there. I think it'd be tough on Caleb and Joshua. It'd almost be a count. There's 1,000 people left. There's 980 people left. It'd be tough on any of them. So maybe that's their way of rationalizing it. Maybe it's their way of saying, maybe we can still get in. It's hard to tell. That's one guy's, Ronald B. Allen, in his commentary on Numbers. That's what he said. Number 16, verse 4. When Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he said to Korah and his company, in the morning the Lord will show us who is his and who is holy, who will bring him near to him. One whom he chooses, he will bring near to him. So what was Moses' reaction to the challenge? Did he take it very seriously? How did he react? There you go. He fell on his face in prayer. He talks to Korah and them, but yeah, he falls on his face. He takes it very seriously. His reaction is, let's give it to God. Let's make him decide. Like I said, I didn't want this job in the first place. If God wants this job, it's his. It's his call. I won't make that call. He didn't defend himself. I think earlier we saw, last time I taught, which was 3 weeks ago, I think at the same time we saw Moses didn't defend himself. He just said, we'll let God do it. He recognizes God has the authority to choose all Israel's leaders. What steps should congregations take to properly address challenges to leadership decisions? We'll have one or two here, right? Probably have had, probably will have. What should we do to properly address challenges to our churches, our congregation's leadership decisions? Okay. See how it plays out.
And then the prayer comes in next. But you shouldn't jump to a conclusion and start, nowadays everything's dramatized.
Sure. Don't create a bunch of drama. Sometimes decisions get made, especially by leadership. Take a leadership around here. We got 160 people or so, maybe 200. If that gets to the leadership, it was a decision that those people, us, we couldn't make. So that means there's more than one way to attack it. You know, a decision that's made through wisdom, through prayer. Take a look at it first. See how it goes. So he uses Korah's own words against them, Moses does, in verse 6 and 7. Do this, take censers, Korah and all his company, put fire on them, put incense on them, before the Lord tomorrow, and the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the Holy One. You have gone too far, sons of Levi. Because that's what he said, that's what Korah said when he first attacked Moses. You have gone too far. So he just turns it around on him. Way to do it. Verse 8, Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister to them, that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you? And would you seek the priesthood also?" So what special role has God already separated the Levites to do? The Levites do what? They're priests. Does the tribe Levi have land? Once they divide it up in Joshua, they don't even get land. So the 12 tribes of Israel really becomes 13 because Joseph's sons each become... Joseph's sons become Israel's sons, Jacob's sons. So now each get a share. Now it makes 13, but then it's drops back because the Levites don't get a share. So, yeah, they become priests. He's already drawn them out. He says this group, this family, this tribe will set them separate, special. They'll get special treatment. They will get offerings that they will take their own share out of. So what Moses asks, isn't this good enough? God's already separated you to be closer to him. Isn't that enough? Sure, yeah. Yeah, when the older son gets an extra share, it's not just really half and half with the prodigal son. The older son doesn't get, he still has half. He's probably got two-thirds. Yeah, isn't what you got enough? Sure. Though Moses did not make the point here, the Kohathites, of whom Korah was one, had the task of carrying the most sacred objects, such as the ark. You can see that in Numbers 4, 1 through 20. They were next in rank to the priests, but they wanted the priesthood itself. So he's even one of these guys. I mean, get the job of carrying the ark, carrying the special stuff that makes the tabernacle as you move it. Pretty important job, right? Isn't that good enough? That's a tough job, isn't it? A lot of responsibility. Pick up that pole, but don't touch the ark, right? Don't rip the three coverings of the tabernacle. That silver socket that the poles go into is heavy. Throw that on your backpack and tote that thing around. Good luck. Yeah. Tough job. But isn't that good enough? God set you aside. So in verse 11, "Therefore it is against the Lord that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him?" So the rebellion was an attempt to take over the priesthood of blank. Aaron. Rebellion was an attempt to take over the leadership role of Moses. The rebellion was an act against the authority of pretty simple. Moses says it. There you go. Verse 12, "And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, 'We ain't coming. You can call us all you want. We're not interested in your challenge. We're not interested in putting it to a test. We'll just stay here.'" Verse 13, "Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." Oh, sorry, there's no question there. "We will not come up." What do they charge Moses with? "You, Mr. Moses, Mr. Self-appointed leader, have done what?"
When they left Egypt, they thought they were going to the promised land.
Yeah. They never quite get there, do they? The promised land is known as the land of milk and honey, right?
Free buffet.
Free buffet. the land of milk and honey. One of our charges is you took us out of where? The land of milk and honey. Let me get this right. You were slaves there for 400 years. Land of milk and honey. Really? Really? They've already got this confused. You know, they already think the place of death, you know, the place of slavehood, that was the promised land? Really? That's what they're blaming him for. You took us out of that place, but you haven't given us a better place. You haven't given us a place flowing with milk and honey. I don't have any land. I got no vineyards. The spies claimed they saw bunches of grapes so big that two men had to carry them. We got none of this. We got quail and manna. How true is any of that? About that much. It's based on truth, but it's not the full truth. Sure, that's true. Where it came from was definitely not. Now, like that, will you put out the eyes of men, these men? Are you going to blind us next? You got us here to die. What's the worst you can do to us? And Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, do not respect their offering. I haven't taken one donkey from them. I have not harmed one of them. Moses' petition to God is, don't listen to them. Don't accept their offering. You know, I haven't taken anything from them. I have not harmed them. I've done what you asked. Moses said to Korah, be present, you and all your company, before the Lord, you and they, and Aaron tomorrow. Let every one of you take his censer and put incense on it. Every one of you bring before the Lord his censer. 250 censers, you also, and Aaron his censer. A censer is what they held incense in, whether it's a plate, bowl, cup, I don't know. That's what a censer is. It's when they put incense in to burn it. So every man took his censer and put fire in them, laid incense on them, and stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting. And the glory of God, the glory of the Lord, appeared to all the congregation. So, big showdown. Moses and Aaron are bringing their censers. Korah and the 250 leaders are bringing theirs. God's going to decide who the leader is. Korah and his friends brought everybody else. Come on down and watch. Tune in tonight at 7 till 3 a.m. in the morning. Everybody tune in to watch who God has chosen to be leaders. Moses didn't ask these people, but they're all standing there. Put yourself there. What do you see? What do you smell? What do you hear? Incense. So yeah, you're going to smell it. I don't know. Whatever they could find at the flea market. It could be like a fog. It could be sandalwood. It could be who knows what flavor. I don't really know. But it's incense. But you're going to smell it, right? You got all these guys burning it. You're going to smell it. What do you hear? Is it silent? I would think they'd all be standing in silence while God's going to make a decision. Is it Moses and Aaron? It's the other ones. God's glory appears. And the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. All these people, the smell of incense, silence waiting on God, and God speaks. They all hear him. He talks to Moses. I'd move a little bit to the left. It's not safe where you're standing. That's basically what he says. God chooses Moses and Aaron. I always have. I always will. And there's going to be a penalty. Verse 22, and they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation? Moses and Aaron fall on their face. Moses and Aaron petitioned God. You going to kill all of them for the voice of one man? The voice of three men? Don't do this. What happens to them, Chuck's going to talk about next week. I'll back it up one little bit, though. What can we learn about Moses' willingness to pray for the people? These are the same people that would like to see him out of the way, but he prays for them. So what godly leaders are supposed to do? Every bit of it. So, next week, we're going to find out what happens. I think you can pretty much figure it out. If you can't, you can go ahead and read the next 12 verses and figure it out. So, there we go. God deals with Korah. Oh, 23-35. Yeah, 12 verses. That's what a challenge looks like in soccer. One guy has the ball, another guy tries to take it away. Somebody's going to win. Somebody's going to lose. So anyways, until next week, thank you all for being here. We'll see you later.